Some people had asked me about some reference for these lectures, and basically everything I'm going to tell you here is also contained in this recent review I wrote with Max Niedermeyer. So today I'm going to discuss the actual construction, the attempt at non-perturbatively defining quantum Einstein gravity along the lines of asymptotic safety, and discuss the chances that this program will work ultimately. So to recall some of our earlier discussions and to systematize it a bit, let's introduce in a slightly more systematic way the basic arena of the renormalization group dynamics, namely theory space. Well, roughly speaking, as we defined it already, theory space is supposed to be the space of all action functionals of a given symmetry type. So it's a functional A, depending on the metric in our case, plus some more fields, background metric and so on. And we assume it can be expanded in terms of some basis invariance, IN, with prefactors, which we refer to as generalized couplings. In gravity, the basis invariants are diffeomorphism invariant functionals, square root g times r times powers of the Riemann tensor with any type of index structure, and more importantly, also non-local terms. More precisely, the coordinates on theory space are taken to be the dimensionless couplings. Those with an over bar are always denoting dimension full couplings. The corresponding dimensionless ones are divided by appropriate powers of K. So A was a generic functional. In particular, I can expand the effective average action in terms of K-independent invariants and K-dependent prefactors. And then the exact renormalization group equation boils down to this infinite set of equations in a symbolic notation. This is what I told you in the beginning, and I gave you an example, the Einstein-Hilbert truncation, where we saw on a truncated subspace how such a system looks on two dimensions. So generally speaking, what the flow equation, the functional flow equation, first of all, provides for you is a nice geometric structure on theory space, namely a vector field. And in mathematics, a vector field on a manifold with sufficiently smooth properties is called a flow, and that's the renormalization group flow in our case. So what is indicated on this transparency is a kind of schematic summary of what we were discussing. This potato here is supposed to symbolize theory space. Points in theory space are action functionals. The flow equation gives you the vector field beta, so in a simple way you can visualize it as little arrows here, but arrows in a functional direction. The integral curves defined by this vector field are the renormalization group trajectories, and in the specific case of the effective average action, the RG trajectories have the property of starting at the bare action and ending for k equals zero at the ordinary effective action.
So what are the other trajectories which are not RG trajectories?
No, I mean this simply would be one for a different bare action, if you'll. I mean they are all RG trajectories. I mean you can have this, like you can think of these discussions as what you find in dynamical systems books, but in an infinite dimensional setting. Now, so you run from the bare action to the effective action. Now, what this boundary here really is supposed to mean in this artistic symbolic language is that all points inside here are supposed to represent finite functionals when re-expressed in dimensionless couplings. So inside here, all functionals are well defined, the beta functions are well defined, everything is fine, whereas outside here, let's assume some of the couplings blow up, there are peer divergences in this one of these infinitely many coordinates, just to make the symbolics clear. And now in this picture, it is very easy in intuitive terms to explain what means renormalization, what does it mean to sort of rigorously, in quotes and quotes, construct a fundamental theory. Namely, the problem of constructing a theory or to renormalize it or to construct a continuum limit, that's all synonymous, means that you should be able to produce a well-defined RG trajectory connecting k equals infinity to zero entirely within this space. It should not run out of it, and as I said, symbolically running out of theory space would mean that some coupling blows up. So the problem is, it is infinite in two directions, this curve. First of all, you have to send k to infinity, that's the ultraviolet renormalization problem, and here k to zero, which is the infrared renormalization problem. So in massless theories, also the infrared is a non-trivial issue. I will not discuss this now, just let's focus on sending k to infinity. Now the basic idea of asymptotic safety is something very simple. Namely, what you have to do in dynamical systems terms is you have to control a trajectory for an infinitely long running time. It runs for an infinitely long time, log k here, and you must make sure that it doesn't do crazy things such as leaving the space and developing divergent couplings. And the manner how this is done in asymptotic safe theories is you take the bare action, the one from which you would like to emanate this trajectory from, you take the bare action to be a fixed point. If you invert the flow, you go upward towards larger values of k, then if this is a fixed point, then you can sort of use up an infinite amount of time at a single point, and as the particle, in quotes and quotes, sits at this single point for an infinitely long time, you have a sort of easy way to make sure that it doesn't do crazy things such as running out of the space, developing divergent couplings. This is the basic idea, yes?
But how can you do that if you, I mean, because what we know is the effective action, so if you go up, you can't decide where you're going.
Yes, that's we'll explain now. No, we don't know the effective action. We do not, the program is we shall compute the starting point. We shall not need to know any effective action. That is an important remark, namely, so this is in brief words, Weinberg's proposal on how to construct quantum Einstein gravity. You assume or you verify there is a fixed point gamma star. Fixed point means all the, I will make a remark on that in a moment. For the moment, let's say all components of beta vanish there simultaneously, and then by the procedure I just mentioned, you take the continuum limit. So this means the quantum theory, this QEG, is then defined by a trajectory which has an initial point, that's now specific to the average action construction, an initial point which for k going to infinity, that's the bare action, essentially where gamma infinity is infinitesimally close to gamma star, so you make sure that when you go upward with k, you run into the fixed point, and in this manner make sure nothing crazy happens. So this is, if you go forward, downward, then you start here and you run down to k equals zero. The endpoint is the standard gamma, knowing that you know everything you would like to know. So this is the basic idea, and what is written here is that the trajectory which defines the theory in this sense lies inside what is called the ultraviolet critical hypersurface of the fixed point. Now, this ultraviolet critical hypersurface is the set of all points which gets attracted into the fixed point as you move upward. And
when you say upward, you mean?
Upward.
You mean k going to infinity.
Right, and that means if you have, you start at any point in that surface, then you are sure when you go to high energy, small distances and so on, nothing crazy happens. You are attracted into the fixed point. You are asymptotically safe. That's where the name comes from. But now this is basically the answer to your question. We are not, the program is not to presume we know what is the effective action at some low scale, but rather to solve this equation. We know, if we could do exact calculations, we know what is beta, and so we can look whether or not it has zeros. And we compute these zeros, and these zeros are possible bare actions. And what then is the effective theory at some scale? That's a prediction, and we have no input. We don't have to use input in that sense. And several times I had been asked during the past few days about the status of the Einstein-Hilbert action. So from the conceptual point of view, the Einstein-Hilbert action does not play any special role. It's just the results I'm going to tell you is later that the truth seems to be not very far. The truth about gamma star seems not to be very far from the Einstein-Hilbert action. But the general remark is gamma star is, first of all, it's a prediction. You have to accept what you get from the theory. So this is not quantizing any postulated action. Now let me be a bit more explicit about how this continuum limit is taken. Well, this is again the RG equation in component form. Now here I wrote ui for the couplings. This is a subtle point which I should mention at this point. Actually, the points which are relevant to the discussion or which makes up theory space in the sense I used the word on the previous transparencies is only the space parametrized by the so-called essential couplings. Essential means you cannot change them by field redefinitions. So for the overall philosophy, this is not so important, but the set to be discussed here is a little bit smaller than the set of all parameters needed to parametrize an action. So now in components, u star are the components of a fixed point if beta I is zero for all I. I has a little bit smaller index set than the n before. So what we can do now is to linearize the flow about this point. This is written here, bij is the stability matrix, the derivative of the betas at the fixed point. This matrix is not symmetric in general, not Hermitian. So if you diagonalize it, in general, you will find some right eigenvectors vi, which in general do not form a complete set and have, in general, not real eigenvalues. In the cases we are going to find in the actual calculations, the v's always will be a complete system, but these thetas, which we shall refer to as critical exponents, are not positive. I'm sorry, they are not real. As I said, this is not Hermitian. So if you do this diagonalization, then you can easily write down the linearized solution in the vicinity of the fixed point. So what enters here is 1 over k, k naught is just a constant, the exponent theta, and this is a constant of integration here. Now, the observation is, of course, if you send k to infinity and you would like the trajectory to hit the fixed point you would like it hits, it approaches your star, then you must switch off all terms here which would diverge. That is, you have to put ci to zero for all I such that the real part of that theta is negative. So this means fine tuning, and this means forcing the trajectory into the ultraviolet critical hypersurface. This definition is repeated here. We shall denote it with the SUV, all points which are pulled into the fixed point as you send k to infinity, or if you think of a congruence of curves or the set of all trajectories hitting the fixed point. This is shown here. This is supposed to be this manifold. This is the fixed point, and these two curves here, when you reverse the arrow, remember the arrow is always in the natural coarse graining direction. The arrow is downward. The arrow points towards the infrared. So k to infinity means upward, contrary to the, in the opposite direction to the arrows. So these two trajectories, they hit the fixed point, they are inside that hypersurface, whereas this one, when you go upward, is missing the fixed point, and that is a trajectory which we exclude from, we do not want. That is one which we shall assume would not lead, or does not, is not guaranteed to lead to a healthy theory. So the important quantity here in order to assess the predictivity of the theory, various speakers now have emphasized, and also Carlo Rovelli yesterday, the problem about non-renormalizability is not so much that something diverges, you always can regularize things, but the problem is that you lose a great deal of predictivity. And so the important number here is this delta UV, that's the dimensionality of this hypersurface, which is, loosely speaking, the number of ultraviolet attractive directions. And if you omit marginal cases, then this is simply the number of thetas which have a positive real part, because positive real part means that you have eigendirections corresponding to these trajectories inside the surface. Negative real part is the directions which here drive you away. So why is this delta important? It is important because delta UV is the number of undetermined parameters, the number of parameters you have to take from experiment. So there exists a delta UV parameter family of trajectories which emanate from the fixed point. And this is for us the bare action. And this means that you have that many free parameters. And if it's finite, this number, then you have the same predictive power as in a perturbatively renormalizable quantum field theory with delta UV renormalizable couplings. If this surface is two-dimensional, then the theory is as predictive as quantum electrodynamics. There you have to take the electron mass and the fine structure constant from experiment, and all other couplings in the effective action are predictions then. So that's the importance of this delta UV. Pardon me?
The bare couplings usually diverge when you set the regulator to zero.
So yes.
In your case, however, I understand that.
No, this is the, I've always to emphasize this, all these pictures, and when I say U star is a point, this is the dimension less a bare coupling. For instance, if you think of a mass has mass dimension 1 by definition, so m divided by k would be the dimensionless counterpart. So if I say that I'm sitting at a point, for the dimension less quantity, then for the dimension full mass, it means that it diverges linearly. So thank you, that's an important remark. And already Weinberg gave heuristic arguments that in fact this number always should be finite. And
what
we
about Annemarie's dimensions and logarithmic divergence for dimensionless coupling constants?
What is about them?
Yeah, in that case, the divergence is expected to be in terms of logarithm, for instance. So
yes. Well, I'm not saying yet anything about how it really is. This is just a set of definitions. But I mean, to answer your question, in the case of gravity, what the examples we compute there are, for as far as we can tell, it's not the marginal case is realized. So it's always power like. But as I said, I mean, one could be a bit more careful and include in the formulas also the marginal case, but it will not appear, so I don't do it. So now let me show you the first evidences that it is indeed true that in simple truncations there does exist an appropriate fixed point. We discussed the Einstein-Hilbert truncation where only G and lambda is running. This capital lambda is the same as the lambda bar I used last time. The dimension full quantity, they are capital G, capital lambda, and that's again this phenomenon I just mentioned. The dimensionless quantities differ from the dimension full ones by k to the d minus 2 and 1 over k squared in the case of Newton's constant and the cosmological constant. So what we are looking for are fixed points for little g and little lambda. So at these fixed points, capital G and capital lambda will run. So these dimensionless quantities are the coordinates on phase space. And in the case of this simple truncation, you have a 2x2 system of ordinary differential equations. I have shown you explicitly what these functions are, and now we can discuss possible simultaneous zeros of the right-hand side. Laura?
Yeah, a question concerning the fact that the running of G-Newton, because you said previously that you should consider only essential coupling, and G-Newton
No,
so
it cannot.
In our
cannot.
In quantum gravity, we always work in Planck units. We always decide
Roberto has written a great paper on that, but you can. I mean, even if you don't, argue on general grounds, you can see by just looking at these equations that you cannot absorb the running of G, they do not decouple, and you cannot boil down this system to a system of one equation only for one essential coupling, and that would be the case if G really was inessential. And the other...
Are you saying that you cannot work in Planck mass units?
No. The reason is very, very simple, because the Planck mass is something like lambda QCD. It's a frozen out dynamical scale, and it would be like if you consider deep inelastic scattering at several TeV, say, then it would be totally unnatural to if you are deep inside a hadron, it would be totally unnatural to think of the diameter of a hadron, and that's a little bit like here why it is unnatural to use the Planck mass, which is an infrared concept, unless you take the running Planck mass, and the running Planck mass is actually the same as K.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one who really in four dimensions looked at the possibility of fixed points was Souma, and he actually found a fixed point, a non-Gaussian fixed point. And what I show you here is the complete flow which we computed from this simple two-dimensional system. Here you have indeed a non-Gaussian fixed point on the lambda g plane. This is the dimensionless Newton constant, cosmological constant. Here is a Gaussian fixed point, we call it, at the origin. And the arrows, again, are downward. You have three classes of trajectories, one towards negative, towards positive, and one towards vanishing lambda in the infrared. The lower part is probably irrelevant. Positive Newton constants you have only on the upper part. Now, if you are at any point on the upper half plane, say here or here, and you go to higher energies in the opposite direction to the arrows, then you are attracted into the fixed point. You spiral into the fixed point. So this is indeed, in this two-dimensional setting, what you need. You have in this two-dimensional truncation, you have a fixed point. And Laurent's question amounts to, is it possible somehow to decouple the sort of motion in this direction from the motion in this direction? And this is impossible. This is not the direct product of two decoupled linear motion, so to speak.
Do you mean that there is no one-dimensional fixed point?
What do you mean, one-dimensional fixed point?
Well, for example, you don't take G, so you take only two with lambda.
Yeah, there is. The other way around is very easy to do it analytically. If you omit the lambda direction and just look at G, then you can solve everything by hand and you find a fixed point. But actually, you should go beyond. I mean, you should do it in the big infinite dimensional space. And if you can do better, then you, of course, prefer the higher dimensional space always. Now, we also have computed what really happens while you flow from the ultraviolet to the infrared. And I just show you one example. This is this trajectory, the separatrix. This is the special trajectory which crosses over from the non-Gaussian to the Gaussian fixed point. What is shown here is, first of all, the dimension full Newton constant and the dimension full cosmological constant. What happens when you send k to infinity, this is k in Planck units. For k very large, the dimension full cosmological constant vanishes, Newton constant vanishes and cosmological constant diverges. When you lower the cutoff, then g grows to its infrared value and the cosmological constant goes to zero for this particular case. Now, here is the same quantity in a log-log plot, and this shows nicely that near the Planck mass, there is a beautiful crossover from the non-Gaussian to the Gaussian fixed point. Above, you have a scaling proportional to 1 over k squared, and below, it is constant. So below k of the order of the Planck mass, there is no running of g. And likewise, for the cosmological constant, there is a crossover from the k squared running in the fixed point, in the ultraviolet fixed point regime, to a k to the fourth running at smaller scales. And this k to the fourth running is basically what everybody knows who has computed the Feynman diagram. This is the quartic divergence of the vacuum energy, which is reflected here. Now, here is a similar plot for the dimensionless quantities. The dimensionless ones are constant in the fixed point regime, and they run like k squared below. So by the way, here you see really how the classical limit.
So where is this fixed point on those?
The fixed point values, this is this horizontal part, the plateau. These quantities, g and lambda, the little g and little lambda, they assume constant values. You cannot see it. Oh, sorry. Here, these are the fixed point values, and this little bump here, that is due to the spirals. But it is, as always in crossover phenomena, the trajectory spends a very long time at one fixed point, very, very slowly moving near the non-Gaussian one. Then it jumps to the other and spends a very, very long time at the other, because at the fixed points, the beta functions are small, and in between they are large. So the long path of the trajectory is passed in a very rapid way, and that's why this transition appears to be pretty sudden. So, there is one important remark I should make, namely just what is the Planck mass? What is defined as M Planck here is the value of, or 1 over square root of g at k equals 0. So this is the Planck mass defined in terms of this infrared value of g. And in terms of this quantity, this emergence of the classical situation happens more or less at the Planck scale. So now that all would be very, very nice. But of course, the question is this Einstein-Hilbert truncation reliable, or are these phenomena, is this fixed point an artifact of the truncation? So what we did here, and that was also started by Suma already, is two kinds of checks on the validity of the Einstein-Hilbert action. The first one is within the Einstein-Hilbert truncation itself, namely there exist certain quantities such as critical exponents or the product g star times lambda star, which are exactly scheme independent in the exact theory. That is, they should not depend on the choice of the cutoff function, this shape function, if you do an exact calculation. Of course, we cannot do an exact calculation, but we can compute these would-be universal quantities in our approximation and then look how they change when we change the cutoff, and this gives us a measure for the reliability of the approximation. And of course, the other thing you should do is you should generalize the truncation by adding more and more and more terms and see that it stabilizes and nothing changes anymore when you add more terms. Then you are fairly confident that you have somehow captured the essential physics. Now what we did in these old papers is to add an R squared invariant and look how the results of the Einstein-Hilbert truncation change. Originally I had in mind presenting you the details of this R squared analysis. I will be very quick here, just show you this first part and will be very quick here. Namely, just this week Roberto Parcacci and his group have finished the calculation of a much more general class of truncations with terms up to r to the 6, and in the end I will show you the results from this more recent calculation. And the upshot of all these analyses is that at least the vicinity of the non-Gaussian fixed point seems to be extremely well described, at least what the qualitative features are concerned, but also certain numerical aspects, by the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. It's not precisely Einstein-Hilbert, there are correction terms, but the qualitative picture, the projection on G lambda space, so to speak, are basically the same.
Does that mean the coefficient of the higher of the coefficient in these fixed points are close to zero?
No, not really, but if you compute, for instance, the critical exponents which belong to the G lambda plane, they don't change much when you add the higher invariants. Or G star times lambda star, is basically the same whether you do it with Einstein-Hilbert or the R to the 6 truncation. So, I mean, all these things are not really observables, but the closer you get to something observable, the more significant is it if it does not change. But I will show the tables in the end. Just to start with, to present the general idea of this analysis of the scheme dependence, let me briefly mention this old R squared calculation. That was a three-dimensional truncation. Besides G and lambda, there was a R squared coupling denoted beta bar. Not to be confused with the beta function, this name beta here is traditional. And then you get a three-dimensional ordinary differential equation set, which, however, is extremely complicated. It involves these functions A, B, C, D for these various terms. And just this one term I will show you to frighten you a bit. The whole beta function fills the whole beta function fills about 20 pages, and I'm showing you this for, and it continues on the next page. I'm showing you this to convince you of one fact. A typical term here involves certain couplings, G and beta, and then there is some functions psi with various arguments. And these psi's are threshold functions which generalize these phi's we had in the Einstein-Hilbert case. And the only thing you should note is that these psi's contain the shape function R0. So at various places, these psi's are dependent on R0. So in this coefficient, you have several dozens of terms. Each of them strongly depends on your choice of R0. Every term depends on R0, and the whole beta function depends on R0. The position of the fixed point, therefore, will depend on R0. And so if you are going to find something which turns out sort of universal, that is independent of R0, then given the complexity of these expressions, it's presumably quite a mystery that this happens. But it's not a mystery if there is a physics reason behind, and the physics reason is the fixed point, then we have a reason why it must happen. Now, let me very quickly go through the results, first of all, of the Einstein-Hilbert truncation, the universality tests. And this is now a list of facts which all support the assumption that this non-Gaussian fixed point is really the reflection or the projection of a genuine fixed point in the big theory space and not an artifact of the truncation. First of all, number one, the fixed point exists for all cutoffs R0 we used. For instance, we changed the shape function. We took a one-parameter family of such exponential cutoffs. Here is a free parameter S, the so-called shape parameter, and we varied that parameter. And we had a similar cutoff with compact support and many more. Then also we have changed the tensor structure in this RK. What I showed you last time we call type A, and then there is also a type B version which is appropriate when you have a transverse traceless decomposition. And it turns out you can play around with this R0. Every R0 which fulfills the basic requirements, the basic limits, leads to a fixed point. You cannot destroy it. On the other hand, in higher dimensions, it is plausible or very likely that the Einstein-Hilbert truncation is bad. In higher dimensions, you can destroy the fixed point. So in order to understand how non-trivial that is, you just go to 10 dimensions or something like that, and sometimes you will have a fixed point, sometimes not. But in 4 dimensions, you cannot destroy it. Second, the sign of G star is always positive. This is a non-trivial result. I mean, a negative sign would be perhaps problematic for stability reasons, and that it's always coming out positive is non-trivial. For instance, below two dimensions, you can see analytically that it's always negative. So this is nice, but it's a non-trivial conspiration of many terms lead to that, and it's not due to some simple algebra. Third point, you find when you diagonalize the stability matrix one complex conjugate pairs of a pair of eigenvalues with real and imaginary part theta prime and theta double prime, both of which are positive. So you, because you have an imaginary part, you get these spirals, and because theta prime is positive, you are attractive in both directions. So now we can, of course, look at the cutoff scheme and gauge dependence. On the next page, I will show you the S dependence of the eigenvalues, and they really turn out fairly constant or independent of this S. But what is much more impressive is the scheme independence of this product G star lambda star. It is basically what you get by varying the cutoffs and the gauge from the Einstein-Hilbert action. You get something between 0.12 and 0.14. Whatever you choose for your R0, you never run out of this interval. Whereas the coordinates of the fixed point in phase space are not guaranteed, or actually are not scheme independent. This is in critical phenomena theory well known, and also well known, and here is the same. The first.
Well, it seems as here you're working Planck limit, right? G lambda star is the cosmological constant in Planck limit.
This is the G star lambda star is the running Newton constant in terms of the running cosmological constant, and it is in principle, it's not Dirac observable, of course, but in principle you can measure it. If you do at some scale the same experiment, at the same scale you measure G, you measure lambda form, the product, that is G star lambda star. This is capital G, capital lambda equals little g, little lambda, and in the fixed point regime is G star lambda star. So in principle you can measure it. And what you find is for alpha equals 0 gauge, as you change the cutoff, G star varies significantly, lambda star varies significantly, but the product does not. For alpha equals 1, the same picture, the product is beautifully constant. Now, actually, what we believe is that this plot is closer to the truth than this one. In principle, the gauge fixing parameter should be taken as a running quantity. For technical reasons, we could do that, but it's much more complicated. But there is a shortcut to the correct result. There are arguments that alpha equals 0 is a fixed point of the alpha evolution. So putting alpha to 0 by hand mimics being at that fixed point, and so it's sensible to focus on alpha equals 0. So the critical exponents are plotted here for various gauges. This is the real part, this is the imaginary part. As I said, the gauge which we think is most reliable is alpha equals 0, and you see if you are not too small with this S parameter, you have a whole long range of S values where these curves are pretty constant. Here there is a certain problem. So that was from the R squared, and now just let me rush very quickly through the R squared case, because as I said, this is sort of old fashioned from 5 years ago, and now we can go even beyond that. Now the R squared calculation, you have a three-dimensional phase space. What you find is the fixed point exists for all cutoffs, it has almost the same lambda star and G star values as in the Einstein-Hilbert truncation and a tiny, very tiny beta star component. For instance, here 0.35, 0.33, or 0.27, 0.29, and a tiny beta star. So you are essentially with a fixed point, it lies essentially in the lambda G plane. Now the eigenvalues are such that you still have a complex conjugate pair and a third real eigenvalue. All of these numbers are positive for any cutoff. So if this is the 1-2 plane, you have these spirals corresponding to the pair and then a linear motion corresponding to the third axis. Now, the theta prime and double prime for Einstein-Hilbert and R squared truncation are essentially the same. And also the eigenvectors of the stability matrix V1 and V2, which correspond to this complex conjugate pair, they span a plane in this three-dimensional space, which essentially coincides with the lambda G plane. So this means that the V1 and V2 normal modes of the higher dimensional truncation are basically the same as the normal modes we had found with Einstein-Hilbert. Now, I'm tempted now to skip this page because it is not very typical. What in R squared you find is that the third eigenvalue theta 3 is much larger than the other ones, something like 28 compared to the other direction attracts with 2.15. Now, I mean, in this truncation, this is really true, but it's not typical, as I will show you in a moment. What this means is that close to the fixed point, this new mode, which is sort of not perpendicular, oblique to the lambda G plane, will decay much more quickly than the other one. So very close to the fixed point, you are essentially in the back to the two-dimensional lambda G dynamics. What one also finds here, which is also not typical, V3 lies basically in the plane of the is almost in the plane, this third direction is almost in the plane spanned by lambda and G. And this has a funny implication, namely it means that even if this third mode is excited as you go away from the fixed point and the pure Einstein-Hilbert dynamics is spoiled, even if it gets excited, then it's not so much the R squared, which you excite in that manner, but just the other two because you are so close to the directions of the other. And that again is because this stability matrix is not positive, so there is no reason to be orthogonal. Well, scheme dependence again can be studied in the R squared case. It is comparable, the quality is comparable to the Einstein-Hilbert situation. G varies significantly, lambda significantly, but the product perfectly constant for a large range of S values. And also, if you are not too small with this shape parameter, the beta, the third, is roughly constant. So perhaps you can cook up some thought experiments indicating that this quantity also could be measured, perhaps. Now, the last, well, this is the critical exponents. Here you see the again theta prime is not bad. I mean, it changes roughly by 50% within this kind of accuracy you can reach, whereas the third one is something like 10. And again, these small values of S are somewhat sick. Now the last remark, the question about predictivity concerns the dimensionality of the ultraviolet critical hypersurface. Well, from the calculation within R squared, clearly you cannot determine what is the dimensionality. You must explore a much larger space of invariance. What can be concluded is that because within R squared, all three directions are attractive, delta UV is at least 3. But now, clearly you would like to know what is the real dimensionality. And what you can do in R squared is go to another dimension, and at least canonically in other dimensions, in lower dimensions, in two dimensions, the canonical count of scaling dimensions is shifted by 2 units. Well, this does not really matter because the canonical dimensions are not relevant, but still they are in the sense that the quantum corrections don't overwhelm everything, they are still relevant, and you could suspect that in lower dimensions already in R squared, the R squared eigendirection is repulsive. And we did this calculation, and it indeed turns out theta 3 in 2 plus epsilon dimensions is negative, so the V3 direction is repulsive. And this is clearly not a proof, but this is consistent with the assumption that in 2 plus epsilon dimensions, delta UV could be as small as 2. And that would mean you define one theory by specifying nothing but the renormalized cosmological constant and Newton constant. But clearly it's not a proof. Okay, that was the old R squared analysis. The overall rough conclusion was that the non-Gaussian fixed point of the Einstein-Hilbert truncation and its qualitative, at least, properties are completely stable against variations of the cutoff was the first check, and the inclusion of the R squared invariant. And it was quite remarkable that the changes due to this higher invariant typically always were smaller than the scheme dependence. So there was some stability, and we interpreted that as a strong evidence that it's not fake, this fixed point, that it is not an artifact of this truncation, but rather reflects a property of the full theory. And now let me show you this table which Roberto Percacci has given to me. This is privileged information, and this is actually work that I have just finished this week. And what it shows is the coupling constants at the fixed point and the critical exponents for a truncation of this form. It is a sum over R, still curvature scalar, powers up to a certain degree. This number here and this number is listed here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the best truncation is always the lowest line here, and it amounts to a 7-dimensional phase space, a 7-dimensional theory space. Now these G's here are the dimensionless versions of the G bars appearing here with the n factorial pulled out. So G0 is up to factors related to the dimensionless cosmological constant, Newton constant. This is related to the beta, and these are new couplings related to R to the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th. And what you see here, these two numbers are the fixed point coordinates, I mean, in these different units with the 16 pi's and so on pulled out, the Einstein-Hilbert fixed point coordinates. These are the fixed point coordinates of the R squared truncation of the R to the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, truncation. What you see, and here is the critical exponents, the thetas here are the opposite sign convention what I used, so omit these minus signs, or they are the negative of this. The most important point is the following. This real part of theta 1, this is what I called theta prime, if you omit the minus signs. First of all, it has a very impressive stability as for the numerical value. Einstein-Hilbert gave 2.3, and the best result available gives 2.4. The imaginary part, 2.1 in the most primitive calculation, 2.4 in the best. This 26, this was the third critical exponent, which I showed you in the R cube calculation, and this seems to be not very typical, this huge number. As you go to R cubed, it becomes a minus 2 and goes down, and here in the last three truncations, it stabilizes very nicely near 1.6 or something like that. And now comes the important thing, namely when you go from the R cubed, no, sorry, from the R squared to the R cubed calculation, then you get one new eigendirection, one more eigenvalue, which has the other sign. So the R to the third term in four dimensions leads to a repulsion. So you have 1, 2, 3, in my former notation, positive real parts, and the other real parts are negative. Theta 3 is negative in that notation, and the real parts of the other ones are also negative. And that means you have a within this approximation, you would conclude that the dimensionality of the SUV is 3. You have to tell three numbers you have to take from experiment, and in the best of these truncations, you then have four predictions for the coefficients in the running action. So that means Carlo Rovelli yesterday posed this problem. We should compute the scattering matrix element for graviton-graviton scattering by computing all these terms, the higher order terms, which in perturbation theory are undetermined constants, which you cannot infer from the theory. And here this problem is the homework is sort of solved to the extent that up to R to the 6 you can compute such scattering amplitudes. You have to put in three numbers and then you get four coefficients as a prediction. Knowing the fixed point data, you know you start at the fixed point and then you run towards the infrared, or at whatever scale you want to know it, you can then get the gamma k with the g n bar of k, where three are to be put in and four are predictions. Okay, so this was the, as I said, just 2 days old results on this very much more general truncation, and this calculation has been possible by some heavy computerization, and I was told that you would never want to wish to look at the beta functions. And I think given the complexity of these calculations and the huge amount of conspiracy which is necessary for all these calculations to produce these absolutely, first of all, converging numbers as far as these universal quantities are concerned, and also basically everything that happens here could have gone wrong, but it all happens in the way you would expect it to happen if there is the fixed point. So if a critic says there is no fixed point, it's all an artifact of a wrong approximation, then this critic would have to explain all these regularities. And for instance, also if you multiply these first two columns, this gives essentially the product G star lambda star up to certain factors of 16 pi. And if you do it all along this column, I told you for Einstein-Hilbert it was 0.13, something like that, between 0.12 and 0.14. And all along this column, even more than the critical exponents, this product is constant. It is all the approximations yield something between 0.12 and 0.14. So the qualitative features, and in particular this number, G star lambda star, is surprisingly well described by Einstein-Hilbert already, and it is a bit of a mystery why Einstein-Hilbert works so well. It's certainly not true that you can get along just alone with Einstein-Hilbert. All these other terms, they are certainly non-zero, and in the R squared calculation, we checked in great detail whether or not you can make the R squared term zero by choosing the cutoff function in a certain way. That's not possible. And so these other terms are there, but for these universal quantities, they seem not to be very important, and in particular not for the qualitative question, is there a fixed point with the right attractivity properties? I think given this much better data now, the conclusion is basically clear that either it is as we think, there is this fixed point, or if it's not there, then some mystery is going on, which would be even more remarkable than the fixed point. Should I? Yes, I think that would be. Yes, I can. This is really quite remarkable, and that's what we discussed on the yesterday. The only difference in two plus one is you get the same spirals, but they hit the Gaussian fixed point just coming along the axis. Here you have a right angle, and that the two eigendirections at the Gaussian fixed point are orthogonal. This is the only reflection of the fact that you have an equal number of ghost and graviton degrees of freedom. All the rest is basically unaffected by that fact. And when people usually say, well, 2 plus 1 dimensional gravity is boring, no dynamical degrees of freedom, this is an essentially irrelevant remark to this problem. It only means this little change in the diagram. It is true there are no dynamical degrees of freedom, but what this flow describes is the anti-screening of a gravitational charge. As in QCD, take a quark and you get it surrounded with a cloud of gluons. You have anti-screening, not screening as in QED. And here is very much the same. Gravity attracts vacuum fluctuations, and you anti-screen masses, so at large distances, the Newton's constant appears to be larger than at shorter distances. That's the simple picture behind this mechanism. And basically, what you are looking at in QED, you would say, you look at the scalar electromagnetic potential, how this depends on a charge density, how they are related. And in gravity, you somehow look at, well, in a Newtonian context, H00 perhaps is related to T00. Of course, H00, or the conformal factor, is not an independent degree of freedom. It is a slave of the matter, but nevertheless, here also A0 is a slave of the electromagnetic charge density, but the screening How that happens is a non-trivial dynamical issue, and that is what is described by this flow. And that's why even if we are not supposed to work in 2+1 dimensions, in this context, 2+1 is as difficult as 3, and that helps almost nothing.
Suppose that there is this fixed point, and then you should start from this type of bare action. Is there any reason to believe that the dynamics of this microscopic action of this variation is in any sense a unit? Is going to be in any sense a unitary dynamics?
This is something you cannot decide by pure thinking or by abstract reasoning. In principle, to find out whether or not this is the case, you must solve. To answer the question at the exact level, you must solve the equation, and unitary dynamics, no ghost poles and things like that, would mean that the gamma k 2, for all values of k, is a positive operator. And whether or not this is the case is because then the flow equation is well defined, and this violation of positivity properties would come if this develops negative eigenvalues, because then in the flow equation you have this denominator, and that would blow up, and the problems with positivity are related to vanishing denominators of that sort. And to answer your question, one would have to really know the exact answer, and then check whether this is true. To make this whole program work, you have to show that you can really find the infinitely long trajectory, also send k to zero, and all along the way this must be positive. But yeah, in perturbation theory. But that has basically no bearing on the stuff here, because usually people are afraid of these poles which appear in the higher derivative terms. But that is in that context totally irrelevant, because in this standard, if you quantize perturbatively R squared gravity, R plus R squared gravity, then the problem is you have this wrong sign, a negative residue excitations near the Planck mass. And usually people come from below, and near the Planck mass the problems occur. But for us, we are somewhere, here is zero, here is M Planck, and our fixed point discussion takes place somewhere here close to infinity. And even if we have an action of the kind R plus R squared with coefficients of order unity, then whether or not there are poles below here, it does not matter, because we do not assume that this is a good approximation near the Planck scale. We have explicitly verified that this tachyon, that these ghost-like excitations are not there. In this R plus R squared calculation, we have verified that this disturbing possibility does not arise for k sufficiently above the Planck mass. And what is to be expected is when you lower the cutoff towards the Planck mass, then you will generate all sorts of also non-local terms, and non-local terms have they are easily capable of curing such instabilities. So the standard textbook R squared discussion does, that applies, that is when you come from here, from small scales, you go towards M Planck, then you encounter these problems, but we are far above, the poles appear here, and we don't believe that this is a good, it is not necessarily clear that for this compensating for this stabilization, you can get along just with these local terms. But when we, I mean, this is related also to this turning set factors around. If we, I mean, for this to settle this issue of a flow which can be continued down to zero, it will be crucial. I mean, if we have a better truncation, then at a certain point it will be crucial to decide whether we are Lorentzian or Euclidean. But
I'm sorry.